is part two of Edmond Kemper Horde Talk. Aiko Ku, or, on the evening of September 14, 1972, what the fuck, really? That was my mom's 9th birthday, what the hell? Kemper picked up a 15-year-old dance student named Aiko Ku, who had decided to hitchhike to a dance class after missing her bus. I mean, she should have, like, waited for another bus, but sure, just hitchhike, of course. No offense. He, again, drove to a remote area where he pulls a gun on Ku before accidentally locking himself out of his car. However, Ku let him back inside despite the fact that the gun was still in the car. Back inside the car, he proceeded to choke her unconscious, rape her, and kill her. Kemper subsequently packed Ku's body into the trunk of his car and went to a nearby bar to have a few drinks, then returned to his apartment. He later confessed that after exiting the bar, he opened the trunk of his car, quote, admiring his catch like a fisherman, end quote. Back at his apartment, he had sexual intercourse with the corpse, then dismembered and disposed of the remains in a similar manner of it as his previous two victims. Ku's mother called the police to report the disappearance of her daughter and put up hundreds of flyers asking for information, but she did not receive any responses regarding her daughter's location or status. The fuck? Cindy Shell, on January 7, 1973, Kemper, who had moved back in with his mother, of course, was driving around the Cabrillo College campus when he picked up an 18-year-old student, Cynthia Ann Cindy Shell. He drove to a wooded area and fatally shot her with a .22 caliber pistol. He then placed her body in the trunk of his car and drove to his mother's house, where he kept her body hidden in a closet in his room overnight. When his mother left for work the next morning, he had sexual intercourse with and removed the bullet from Shell's corpse, then dismembered and decapitated her in his mother's bathtub. Kemper kept Shell's severed head for several days. What the hell? Regularly engaging in irremedio with it, and then buried it in his mother's garden, facing upward toward her bedroom. After his arrest, he stated that he did this because his mother, quote, always wanted people to look up to her, end quote. He discarded the rest of Shell's remains by throwing them off a cliff. Over the course of the following few weeks, all except Shell's head and right hand were discovered, end quote, pieced together like a macabre jigsaw puzzle, end quote. End quote. A pathologist determined that Shell had been cut into pieces with a power saw. A power saw? Okay, dude, you don't let her face the fuck. Jeez, please. I swear to God, people are like, serial killers want to be like Leatherface or some shit. Like, what? Rosalind Thorpe and Allison Liu. On February 5, 1973, after a heated argument with his mother again, Kemper left his house in search of possible victims. With heightened suspicion of a serial killer preying on hitchhikers in the Santa Cruz area, students had been advised to accept rides only from cars with university stickers on them. Kemper was able to obtain such a sticker as his mother worked at UCSC. He encountered 23-year-old Rosalind Heather Thorpe and 20-year-old Allison Liu on the UCSC campus. According to Kemper, Thorpe entered his car first, reassuring Liu to also enter. He first fatally shot Thorpe and then Liu with his pistol and wrapped their bodies in blankets. Kemper also brought his victims back to his mother's house. This time, he beheaded them in his car and carried the headless corpses into his mother's house to have sexual intercourse with them. He then dismembered the bodies, removed the bullets to prevent identification, and discarded the remains the next morning. Some remains were found at Eden Canyon a week later, and more were found near Route 1 in March. When questioned in an interview as to why he decapitated his victims, he explained, quote, "The head trip fantasies were a bit like a trophy. You know, the head is where everything is at. The brain, eyes, mouth, that's a person. I remember being told as a kid, you cut off the head and the body dies." Well, I mean, if you decapitate someone, like, Like the eyes, like their eyes, like will move until 7 seconds. Brain, I guess. So probably, yeah. The body's nothing after the head is cut off. Well, that's not quite true. There's a lot left in the girl's body without the head. That's true, yes. Finally, Claire Nels, Kemper Strandberg, and Sally Hallett. So on April 20, 1973, after coming home from a party, 52 years old, his mother was, year-old Claire Nels, Elizabeth Strandberg, awakened her son with her arrival. While sitting in her bed reading a book, she noticed Kemper enter her room and said to him, quote, "I suppose you're going to want to sit up all night and talk now," end quote. Kemper recalled, quote, "No, good night," end quote. He then waited for her to fall asleep. Then he sneaked back into her room to bludgeon her with a claw hammer and slit her throat with a penknife. He then decapitated her and engaged in irrematio with her severed head, of course, then used it as a dartboard. Jeez. Kemper stated that he, quote, put her head on a shelf and screamed at it for an hour, threw darts at it, end quote, and ultimately, quote, smashed her face in, end quote. He also cut out her tongue and larynx and put them in a garbage disposal. However, the garbage disposal could not break down the tough vocal cords and ejected the tissue back into the sink. Kemper later said, quote, "That seemed appropriate as much as she bitched and screamed and yelled at me over so many years," end quote. Well, he did that because he hated his mother so much. She treated him like shit. She abused him, verbally abused him. Like, man, I feel bad for him. But like at the same time, you know, no, actually, no. No, actually, she deserved it. She deserved it, honestly. She literally deserved it. So yeah. And then Kemper hid his mother's corpse in a closet and went to a drink at a nearby bar. Upon his return, he invited his mother's best friend, 59-year-old Sarah Taylor, Sally Hallett, over to the house to have dinner and watch a movie. When Hallett arrived, Kemper strangled her to death to create a cover story that his mother and Hallett had gone away together on vacation. He subsequently put Hallett's corpse in the closet, obscured any outward signs of a disturbance, and left a note to the police. It read, quote, "Approximately 5:15 a.m. Saturday, no need for her to suffer any more at the hands of this horrible murderous butcher. It was quick, asleep the way I wanted it. Not sloppy and incomplete. Gents, just a lack of time," end quote. Sorry, no, sorry, not end quotes. "I got things to do," end quote. Afterward, Kemper fled the scene. He drove nonstop to Pueblo, Colorado, taking caffeine pills to stay awake for the over 1,000-mile journey. He had three guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition in his car, and he believed he was a target of an active manhunt. After not hearing any news on the radio about the murders of his mother and Hallett when he arrived in Pueblo, he found a phone booth and called the police. He confessed to the murders of his mother and Hallett, but the police did not take his call seriously and told him to call back at a later time. Wow. Several hours later, Kemper called again, asking to speak to an officer he personally knew. He confessed to that officer of killing his mother and Hallett, then waited for the police to arrive and take him into custody. Upon his capture, Kemper also confessed to the murders of the six students. When asked in a later interview why he turned himself in, Kemper said, quote, "The ritual purpose was gone. It wasn't serving any physical or real or emotional purpose. It was just a pure waste of time. Emotionally, I couldn't handle it much longer. Toward the end there, I started feeling the folly of the whole damn thing, and at the point of near exhaustion, near collapse, I just said to hell with it and called it all off," end quote. Wow. Wow. Oh, I mean, what about the trial? Let me see the trial video. It's like a trial. Oh, there is. Oh shit, there is. Yeah, like there well before the video, like the trial, there's like also the information of it. So Kemper was indicted on 8 counts of first-degree murder on May 7, 1973. He was assigned to the chief public defender of Santa Cruz County, attorney Jim Jackson. Due to his explicit and detailed confession, his counsel's only option was to plead not guilty by reason of insanity to the charges. Kemper tried to commit suicide in custody. His trial went ahead on October 23, 1973. Three court-appointed psychiatrists found Kemper to be legally sane. One of the psychiatrists, Dr. Joel Fort, investigated his juvenile records and the diagnosis that he was once psychotic. Fort also interviewed Kemper, including under truth serum, of course, and relayed to the court that Kemper had engaged in cannibalism, alleging that he sliced flesh from the legs of his victims, then cooked and consumed these stripes of flesh in a casserole. Nevertheless, Ford determined that Kemper was fully cognizant in each case, and stated that Kemper enjoyed the prospect of the infamy associated with being labeled a murderer. Kemper later recanted the confession of cannibalism. California used the M. Wait, what? Used the M. Nike 10 standard, which held that for a defendant to, quote, establish a defense on the ground of insanity, it must be clearly proved that at the time of the committing of the act, the party accused was laboring under such a defect of reason from disease of mind and not to know the nature and quality of the act he was doing, or if he did know it and did know it, that he did not know he was doing what was wrong, end quote. Kemper appeared to have known that the nature of his acts was wrong, and he had shown signs of malice aforethought. On November 1, Kemper took the stand. He testified that he killed the victims because he wanted them, quote, for myself, like possessions, end quote, and attempted to convince the jury that he was insane based on the reasoning that his actions could have been committed only by someone with an aberrant mind. He said that two beings inhabited his body and that when the killer personality took over, it was, quote, kind of like blacking out, end quote. On November 8, 1973, the six men, six women jury deliberated for 5 hours before declaring Kemper sane and guilty on all counts. He asks for the death penalty, requesting, quote, death by torture, end quote. However, with a moratorium placed on capital punishment by the Supreme Court of California, he instead received 7 years to life for each count, with these terms to be served concurrently, and was sentenced to the California Medical Facility in Vacaville. I wonder how he reacted when he was going to get the life sentence instead of the death sentence. So who knows? This also a trial video, of course. So yeah. Mindhunter, Slayer in Court, 1973. Damn, he's that freaking big. Like tall, not like fat, of course. So no offense. See the comments. Dude's head and shoulders above everybody, Michael Myers IRL. What the fuck? Dude's a giant. If he wanted to, he could rip those guards in half. Fuck no, he wouldn't. The fuck? Such a coward for killing poor defenseless animals and young women. He wouldn't do that to Steven Seagal or any other tough person. True. Yeah. No, obviously no. He'll get his ass kicked, obviously, like the fuck. Nice. Okay. Her mother does. You mean his mother, dumbass? His mother deserved it, but those girls, the hottest of them was Anne Pesh. Really? Oh my god, I'm done. There's also replies. It's not always about justice. Sometimes it's just about killing. I can relate to this feeling. For example, when I was a kid, I would lure my friend to a river to drown him when I knew no one was watching. I did 4 attempts to drown someone before I even went to school. Imagine all the things I did when I started to become a teenager. Not gonna write a book about myself here, but my point is, this is just one example of what I did, and I did a lot of things. Why? No reason. I just want to do things like this for the sake of sadistic satisfaction. You don't need to do me wrong for me to want to pray and kill you, but if you did me wrong, hold on. Another person, and about the intimidating part, what many people thought like you before the X moment to happen, they were brave before that, then I just see fear in their eyes and hear beg for mercy. I am really sad that I don't have opportunity to know you in person, because actions are so much better than words. Definitely, yes, you're definitely right about that. So. Imprisonment. So in the California medical facility, Kemper was incarcerated in the same prison block as other notorious criminals such as Herbert Mullet and Charles Manson. Holy shit. Kemper showed particular disdain for Mullen, who committed his murders at the same time and in the same area as Kemper. He described Mullen as, quote, just a cold-blooded killer, killing everybody he saw for no good reason, end quote. Kemper manipulated and physically intimidated Mullen, who at 5'9" was more than a foot shorter than he. Kemper stated that, quote, Mullen had a habit of singing and bothering people when somebody tried to watch TV, so I threw water on him to shut him up. Then when he was a good boy, I give him peanuts. Herbie liked peanuts. That was effective because pretty soon he asked permission to sing. That's called behavior modification treatment, end quotes. Okay. Kemper remains among the general population in prison and is considered a model prisoner. He was in charge of scheduling other inmates' appointments with psychiatrists and was an accomplished craftsman of ceramic cups. He was also a prolific reader of audiobooks for the blind. In 1987, Los Angeles Times article stated that he was a coordinator of the prison's program and had personally spent over 5,000 hours narrating books with several hundred completed recordings to his name. But he retired from these positions in 2015 after he experienced a stroke and was declared medically disabled. He received his first rules violation report in 2016 for failing to provide a urine sample. Really, a stroke he suffered? Damn. While imprisoned, he has participated in a number of interviews, including a segment in the 1982 documentary The Killing of America, as well as an appearance in the 1984 documentary Murder, No Apparent Motive. His interviews have contributed to the understanding of the mind of serial killers. FBI profiler John Douglas described Kemper as, quote, among the brightest, quote, prison inmates he interviewed, and capable of, quote, rare insight for a violent criminal, end quote. Kemper is forthcoming about the nature of his crimes and has stated that he participated in the interviews to save others like himself from killing. Save others like himself from killing. That's interesting. At the end of his Murder, No Apparent Motive interview, he said, quote, there's somebody out there that is watching this and hasn't done that, hasn't killed people and wants to, and rages inside and struggles with that feeling, or is so sure they have it under control. They need to talk to somebody about it. Trust somebody enough to sit down and talk about something that isn't a crime. Thinking that way isn't a crime. Doing it isn't just a crime. It's a horrible thing. It doesn't know when to quit, and it can't be stopped easily once it starts, end quote. Wow. He actually, like, wanted someone to talk to. He actually wanted to let somebody talk to get help. So wow, that's something that no serial killer has ever done before. Holy shit. He also conducted an interview with French writer Stephanie Bourgoin in 1991. He's still alive, of course, but he admitted in 2020 that he had lied about many of his claimed experiences. He presented himself as an expert on serial killers for many years. So why the fuck did he lie about that shit? The fuck? Kemper was first eligible for parole in 1979. He was denied parole that year, as well as parole hearings in 1980, 1981, and 1982, 40 years ago. He subsequently waived his right to a hearing in 1985. He was denied parole at his 1988 hearing, where he said, quote, "Society is not ready in any shape or form for me. I can't fault them for that," end quote. He was denied parole again in 1991 and in 1994. He then waived his right to a hearing in 1997, 25 years ago, and in 2002, 20 years ago. He attended the next hearing in 2007, 15 years ago, where he was again denied parole. Prosecutor Adrian Simmons said, quote, "We don't care how much of a model prisoner he is because of the enormity of his crimes," end quote. Kemper waived his right to a hearing again in 2012, 10 years ago, again denied parole in 2017, 5 years ago, and is next eligible in 2024. But yeah, let's find out if he will be still, if he will still be alive at that time, obviously. Okay, interviews. Here's an interview from the documentary The Killing of America in 1981.
"I'm an American, and I went off the deep end."
Ed Kemper has been serving a life sentence in this California prison since 1973, when, at the age of 24, he murdered his mother, then called police and confessed to having dismembered college co-eds for 2 years, as well as cannibalizing and raping their headless bodies.
"When someone abandons himself to being a victim, he's going to have to be one."
With an IQ of 136, Kemper is now the prison's best reader of books for the blind.
"I'm saying I've wanted to kill my mother since I was 8 years old, and I'm not proud of that."
Wait a minute. He was thinking of killing his mother? I mean, like he wanted to kill his mother since he was 8 years old? But he's not proud of it. Holy shit.
"It started with surrogates at a non-human level. Physical objects, my possessions, other people's, destruction of things that are cared about, and then destruction of things that are living on a lower level, small animals, insects, animals, and then finally people. It started coming to a head again, so I went back down, I ran away back down there, and then a month later I'm up living with my grandparents in the mountains, and 10 months later I murdered them. And it made it worse to be on top of a mountain. I was literally on top of a mountain when it happened. And I sensed everybody in the world just stopping what they were doing, turning around, saw what I did, and are coming to get me. And I knew I was paranoid at that moment. I knew anybody that came up there and gave me a funny look or a fishy eye or quizzical look, I'd have blown their brains out thinking they were coming to get me. And if it had been in a city, I would have been a mass murderer at age 15. I would have killed until they gunned me down. I wouldn't have been able to reason my way out of it. I was scared to death, and I was violent. I felt my back hit that wall. I was the rabbit that always ran, that always backed away, always burned his bridges. Suddenly, there weren't any more. And my back hit that wall, and I came out screaming and kicking and shooting."
He was released to the one person that authorities at the state mental hospital recommended he never see again.
"I got parole to my mother. Atascadero decided that I didn't never need to talk to her again at all. Don't give her a Christmas present. Leave her alone. She got her pound of flesh out of you. I wasn't sniveling about my mother to them. I didn't like to hear what they had to say about her. She went through three husbands like a hot knife through butter. 4 months after I was out, I was back into the fantasy bag. My first date was an absolute disaster. Wasn't her fault. You know? And I didn't blame her even then. I'm saying it was a terrible tragedy, but boy, she didn't ever talk to me again. It was awful. Wasn't sexual or grabbing at her. That was just such a dork, taking her to a John Wayne movie and Denny's. It's terrible. I'd never been on a date at 16. That was cool, you know? I'd never been on a date. You know, I was locked up since I was 15.
I mean, listen, you mean, you can't blame him. You can't blame him. I mean, at least he didn't, like, he said how, he didn't blame his first day because, like, I guess he thinks it's his own fault that he never went on a date. But in actuality, I blame his mother for, like, treating him like shit, obviously. So, like, yeah.
But I can't tell her that. Oh, gee, you don't mind me. You know, she kind of got hung up on my looks or whatever. You know, I mean, she's a gorgeous young lady, pure class. And she saw something there that I guess wasn't there. And, boy, she found out quick.
Taking elaborate precautions, he drove around universities and picked up hitchhiking co-eds while wearing these glasses.
Yeah. These are the ones. Now, would you get in the car with this man? Huh?
Huh. He has, wow. He kept his old glasses since he was a teenager? Holy crap.
Hmm? State has made me much more credible as a human being.
While his mother worked at the university, Kemper buried the mutilated bodies in the mountains and took the severed heads home. Then he slept with their heads for days and finally went looking for more.
But I was losing a grasp on something that was too violent to keep inside forever. As I'm sitting there with a severed head in my hand, talking to it or looking at it, and I'm about to go crazy, literally. I'm about to go completely flywheel loose and just fall apart. I say, wow, this is insane. And then I told myself, no, it isn't. You're saying that. And that makes it not insane. I said, I'm sane. And I'm looking at a severed. I said, well, wait a minute. I see old paintings and drawings of Viking heroes talking to severed heads and taking them to parties, old enemies in leather bags, part of our heritage. This is me back then, in 1972 and 73, unable to live with the fact that I just stabbed to death and cut the throat of an innocent young woman. Innocent in the sense that she did not plan on that happening. She didn't do anything specifically for that to happen to her. That she was a very active participant in her own death. And in my memory of that, she was 19 years old, and her roommate in the trunk who died right after that was 18. I didn't go hog wild and totally limp. What I'm saying is I found myself doing things in an attempt to make things fit together inside. I was doing sexual probings and things. I mean, in the sense of striking out and reaching out and grabbing and pulling to me, but appalled at the sense that it wasn't working. That isn't the way it's supposed to be. It isn't the way I want it. See what I'm saying? And yet I get, during that time, I become engaged to someone who's young and is beautiful and very much the same advantages and very much the same upbringing and Disneyland values. And she's very much the reason I surrendered. I picked up two girls who were so much like the first two, it was unbelievable. Almost identical circumstances. And I let them go. Everything went towards killing them, and I didn't. But I'm saying, wow, it's uncanny. It was almost like it was meant to be that way. And I said, wow, this got to stop. And I let them out. They never even knew what was going on. I let them out. I would have gotten away with those two being murdered. I said, no, it's got to stop. And a week later, I murdered my mother. Went back to Santa Cruz and killed her.
He killed her with a hammer in her sleep, cut off her head and hands, but then put her vocal cords in the garbage disposal and threw darts at her severed head.
I am an American, and I killed Americans. I am a human being, and I killed human beings. And I did it in my society.
I'm gonna do part 3. I'll be right back.